Hello and welcome to the SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. Today we're here to review the top ways to identify and stop malware attacks quickly. Joining us on the line is Lenny Zeltzer, an IT security and risk management expert. Lenny is the Security Consulting Practice Director for IT Infrastructure and Hosting Provider Savvis. He also teaches malware-related courses for the SANS Institute. Lenny is based in New York City. Thanks for being here today, Lenny.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of SearchSecurity.com's Security School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to SearchSecurity.com/Security School. Lenny, let's set the stage before we get started. It may seem obvious, but a company can spare itself great harm if it can identify and stop malware incidents quickly. Discuss briefly your experiences with what happens when an enterprise does and doesn't detect and stop malware in a matter of seconds, minutes, hours, any sort of quick time frame there. What are the stakes for security teams and the businesses they support?
Well, of course, we should look at malware as a tool, as a tip of the spear, of the spear, as some people say, that allows a remote attacker or the author of malware to benefit at the victim's expense. So that means that the longer malware exists in the environment, the more an opportunity its author or the attacker using malware has to take advantage of the victim. The challenge, of course, is that a lot of malware is written to operate in a very stealthy manner so that it's hard to detect. A lot of malware spreads pretty quickly so that even if you do detect it on one system, it can be very hard to contain. And that's why I think organizations are starting to look at the malware problem not so much as an issue that exists as a single point in time, and that is as a single infected workstation that I just need to run antivirus on and clean up, but rather, really, to deal with the malware problem, I think we need to start looking at incidents that involve malicious software with a longer-term perspective. So yes, it is very important to be able to identify malware, malware presence, or the use of malware on the environment quickly. But at the same time, we also need to put some effort into determining how we're going to respond to such an attack and what efforts we're going to put in place to try to resist it in the first place.
Okay, then, let's begin with our list of the top ways to identify and stop malware attacks quickly. Tip number one, planning. Be prepared and expect malware incidents to occur. Lenny, I think most organizations have firewalls, anti-malware software, and the like in place for just that reason. But what else should enterprises do to prepare for a malware incident?
Well, I think the most important thing to keep in mind here is that the organization nowadays should make its plans for malware and related security defenses with the expectation that somehow malware will find its way into the environment. Right. We can put up all the firewalls and we can have a bunch of antivirus tools deployed, but you know, malware authors are creative human beings who work for companies, use systems in unpredictable ways, and are also creative at bypassing our own security controls, so malware will find its way into the environment. So if that's an assumption that the security architect has when planning the malware defense strategy, I think it's going to put the person in the right frame of mind. Now, the most baseline security control is firewalls, right, at the network level. And nowadays you have firewalls that can include additional features that are very important for malware defenses, and that is being able to not just decide what traffic should be allowed in and out of the environment based on ports or destination IP addresses, but also you want to have some technology that is able to examine the payload of the traffic. And you're looking in an inbound direction to identify any network traffic that might be carrying malicious software, but also it is very important to pay attention at the traffic that is leaving the environment, because you might have a hard time finding traffic that brings malware into the enterprise, and maybe malware will find its way not through the firewall, but through a USB key. But you might have a slightly easier time noticing traffic that is leaving your environment, and that is malware trying to exfiltrate data, or maybe malware trying to update itself, or malware trying to record the infection coordinates with its author or the attacker. Also, very important to consider how your organization will be able to resist infections for common malware propagation tactics. So we already talked about network-based propagation, firewall defenses. I touched upon USB keys being a popular infection vector, so plan for somehow controlling how your employees can use USB keys and what can or cannot run from USB keys. Also, very important to plan for attacks and malware propagation incidents that involve social engineering techniques, just because an attacker does not have to exploit a technological vulnerability to run malicious code in your environment. The attacker simply needs to be able to convince your employee to click on a link or open an attachment. And of course, malware can spread, especially network worms, by guessing network user credentials. So looking at how strong your users' passwords are is an important aspect of planning for malware attacks. And lastly, once you have thought about how malware will propagate and how you can resist the propagation, you should be thinking about how you can resist malware's attempts to do bad things in your environment, upgrade itself, exfiltrate data, communicate with the attacker. So I guess my point is that it is important to look at various aspects of the life cycle of a malicious program, both propagation as well as the use of it by the attacker, and make security plans accordingly.
Continuing on, tip number two in our list of the top ways to identify and stop malware attacks quickly: resist attacks by investing in the right technology. Lenny, there are so many different products and product categories out there that claim to be able to stop all the latest attack methods. How can companies figure out what would truly be effective for them?
Well, I'm very glad you're using the term resist, because it is too common to, I think, mistakenly use the term block. People say, well, how are we going to block malware? And I think using the term resist makes it clear that we won't be able to block every single attack, but we can make it hard for malware to propagate. We can make it more expensive for attackers to try to get malware into our environment. And the traditional way of resisting attacks has been and continues to be having an antivirus suite. And in this case, I want to say that modern antivirus products include multiple components that can resist both infections and the use of malware. And it's important to note, because in many cases an organization might talk to an antivirus vendor and look purely based on price. What's the least expensive antivirus component they can purchase? Well, nowadays people use the term suite or internet security suite. And I think it is important now to look at the full suite of related anti-malware products. And that means having not just the antivirus scanner, but also having making sure that the toolkit includes anti-keylogger detection, or protection of the web browsing activities of the user, or personal firewall that can be activated and centrally controlled in an enterprise environment. So I think it's important to start thinking about antivirus products not just as standalone tools, but as a set of utilities that are integrated together. And your favorite antivirus vendor will be happy to talk to you about what they have to offer. But also, we can assume that some malware will bypass the detection of an antivirus suite, whether it's signature-based or behavioral detection. Look, malware will find its way into the environment. So what happens next? Well, then you need to think about how else you can resist both the infection of subsequent malware components as well as the use of malware. And that involves carefully restricting outbound network traffic so that malware has a hard time communicating with the attacker, receiving instructions, sending out data, updating itself. Also, it involves, if at all possible, restricting what privileges the end users have in your environment, so that if they end up running a malicious program, you want to limit what that malicious program can do on the local host. You want to make it harder for it to embed itself deep in the operating system. And using the latest features of Windows 7 really helps to limit the capabilities of a user, even if the user has admin rights on a Windows 7 system that's properly configured, you might be able to limit what malware can do even in that environment. Also, we all know that malware frequently spreads by taking advantage of security vulnerabilities, and that means keeping up with patches. And we've been talking about the need to resist attacks and infections through keeping up to date on security patches. We've been talking about it for a long time. It still continues to be a huge problem. And nowadays, it is particularly hard to deal with patching all the software that people run on the workstations. So, but right now, very important, a lot of malware finds its way by exploiting a client-side vulnerability through a web browser or Adobe Acrobat in some general environment. So resist attacks by keeping those components up to date on patches. So really, I think a lot of the same technologies that people use for security in general, both at the application level, at the network level, at the system level, they certainly apply to malware. And I think the most important advice, again, is to assume that malware will find its way in and think what you can do to make it harder for that malware to reach its full potential within your environment.
Lenny, I know you have in-depth knowledge of cloud-based security technologies. Just briefly, I know there's a lot of hype out there right now about cloud technologies, but have cloud-based products and services become a viable option for blocking some of the common and emerging malware attack methods that you're seeing?
So I think you might be referring to the various security technologies that are available to companies and to users under the cloud moniker. So for example, managed security services are now called cloud-based security services in many ways. So from my perspective, the adoption, the increased adoption and acceptance of cloud-based outsourced managed security services makes security affordable to organizations that normally might not be able to purchase all of the various security components. So especially if you look at small businesses, typically maybe they can afford to buy an antivirus, but they're never going to have a 24/7 security operations center where they regularly look at firewall logs and do log correlation. But nowadays, maybe they can use a cloud-based security service that introduces that level of security without a significant upfront investment. Also, another frequent topic of discussion in relation to malware and in the context of cloud computing is the notion of cloud-based antivirus tools. And that is a term that is oftentimes misused and that is still a bit of, well, it's a bit cloudy, if you will, what people mean when they say cloud-based antivirus. But really, what it typically implies is an antivirus tool, a modern antivirus tool, has both signature-based detection capabilities and also the ability to detect anomalous behavior on the protected host. The notion of introducing a cloud brain into an antivirus tool talks about collecting various data from an end-user system and sending it into the antivirus provider's cloud, or basically servers running in the provider's data center, so that additional analytics can be done and so that all of the protected systems act as sensors across the world to identify problems very early on that might be otherwise not noticed. And once the data is analyzed in the cloud, then automated protection might be distributed to the nodes. So I think that is typically what people use or think about when they talk about cloud-based AV capabilities.
Moving on with our list of the top ways to identify and stop malware quickly. Tip number 3, detection. Revisit how you're identifying malware when it finds its way into your environment. Lenny, what should companies be doing in that regard? And are there common mistakes that you've seen organizations make?
Well, the most common way for enterprises to detect malware is to rely purely on their antivirus tools. And of course, we recognize that it's a problem because if this provided 100% detection all the time, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it's important to have up-to-date antivirus tools, and it's important for someone to keep an eye on the logs that an antivirus tool generates. But the common mistake that I have seen is an enterprise looking at its antivirus tool console, and it might notice that malware was detected on such and such host, and it was blocked, and so the system administrator is happy. But that might not be enough, because if a single piece of malware was found on a host, there's a reasonably good chance that there might be other malware that was present there that simply wasn't detected. And so I think using an antivirus tool as one of the sensors into your environment is important, but don't just rest comfortably in the alerts that it generates. Do follow up on malware, on systems where malware is commonly found. There might be other malware that wasn't detected there. Of course, also, it's important to keep an eye on your network-based sensors to identify not necessarily the presence of malware itself in the network traffic, but rather to identify ways in which malware uses the network to stay in touch with its attackers. A lot of organizations maintain or make use of known or other blacklists of known malicious IP addresses, and they might examine their outbound firewall logs, or they might examine outbound NetFlow data to identify which of their internal systems communicate with known malicious hosts on the internet. And if such a connection is detected, that could be a strong indicator that the internal host might be infected, even though you've been unable to identify the malicious executable just yet. Also, it is helpful to empower your end users to observe the signs of infection and make it easy for them to report these potential incidents to the organization's IT staff. Because people get to know the systems that they use on a daily basis, and they might be able to identify that it behaves differently. They might not know exactly how it's different. Maybe it's a little bit more sluggish, or maybe the windows are positioned just a little bit off, but somehow people are very good anomaly detectors. But organizations typically don't make it easy to report these incidents to the help desk. Also, people don't want to look stupid. You know, they're going to call help desk, and they're afraid somebody's going to make fun of them. You know, oh, you're just being paranoid. You know, empower your users to report these incidents to the help desk, take their report seriously, investigate these reports, and you might find malware, even if your technological controls fail you. And I think another really good source of data is DNS logs. Your internal server DNS logs can show you when your internal hosts attempt to resolve known malicious host names. And even if you can't see the traffic using firewall logs or NetFlow data, you might be able to look at your internal DNS logs and investigate systems that are internal to your environment that try to resolve known malicious host names, because they probably do this because they're infected, and that's when you might deploy a technician to look into that situation a bit deeper.
Okay, Lenny, here's the last tip on our list of the top ways to identify and stop malware attacks quickly. Respond. Know what to do to contain and ultimately recover from a malware incident. What are the key steps companies must be prepared to do when an incident occurs?
The most common advice that I think is very solid is to be prepared to respond to an incident, because if you're not prepared, you're going to get shocked, and it'll be the equivalent of having a deer in the headlights look. People don't make decisions very well under the pressure of responding to the incident. So the more prepared you are, the better you're going to respond. And being prepared means having personnel that's trained in incident response, having personnel that knows what malware is about, having the right tools available to them, and perhaps already deployed in advance, so that you can use them to contain the malware infection, eradicate it, and recover so that you can get back to business as quickly as possible. Of course, it's easy to say be prepared, but we live in an environment that tends to have a very reactive approach to security. So as much as I'd like to say be prepared, I recognize that many companies simply won't be prepared. And that means, at the very least, having some cheat sheets available to you, and I've been working a lot of these cheat sheets recently, or having some tools at least put aside. Maybe you don't even know yet exactly how to use them because you haven't prepared as you should be prepared. But if you're not prepared, at least have something you can use when responding to the incident. The common bridge that takes us from the detect phase to the respond phase, I think, is the ability to identify the signs of malware and then explore your enterprise to determine what is the scope of your infection, because without knowing the scope, you won't know how to respond. And the most likely scenario is that through either firewall logs or antivirus tools or maybe a human report, you've noticed that a particular system is infected. And what should be going through your mind is, what other systems are infected in my environment with the same beast? And to answer that question, you really want to have some way of learning about the initial infection. Perhaps that involves reverse engineering the malicious executable or doing some forensic review of the compromised host. And you want to establish what people typically call indicators of compromise. And that is the signs of the infection, so that you can look for these signs across your enterprise to see what else is infected. And the signs might be a particular registry key exists on the infected host, or a particular file exists in a particular folder, or a certain mutex object is being maintained by the operating system. All of these are signs that you can learn and derive from the initial infection and look across your enterprise. And I think of this as a concept of being able to write signatures for this malware that are custom to the incident. And unfortunately, there are very few tools available to us now that would allow you to create your custom signatures so that you can look for these indicators of compromise across the enterprise. Unfortunately, none of the antivirus tools let you use their agents for deploying custom signatures. And probably the most promising free tool that's available for doing something like this is called Yara, Y-A-R-A. And if you're interested in doing this kind of work, do take a look at Yara. It allows you to create your own signatures so that you can scan your environment, you understand the scope. And once you know the scope of the incident, well, then you typically do triage. You prioritize how you respond. You perhaps decide how and when you're going to isolate the infected systems from your environment, perhaps by unplugging them from the network. Then you'll respond. You'll need to decide, hopefully in advance, what criteria you're going to use to try to clean up the host, or nowadays in most cases I recommend simply wiping the host clean, restoring it from backup, and moving on with business, hoping that you didn't restore the image that was already infected. So once you've cleaned up the infection, or I hope reinstalled the operating system and its applications, then it's important to keep an eye on that host that used to be infected, just so that you detect if reinfection appears, right? If it was infected once, maybe through user's actions or through some vulnerability that was present there, there's a reasonably good chance that it might get infected again. So I would put a previously infected host on your list of hosts to watch more closely. And those really are the things that come to the top of my mind when I think about responding to malware incidents.
Lenny, before we wrap up, you've covered some great strategic and tactical points today. But to borrow a quote from Mike Tyson about boxing that I think applies here, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the mouth, so to speak. After companies deal with an incident and have recovered from it, what should they then do to review and learn from it so that they are less likely to get punched in the face again down the road?
I think that it's a great way to wrap up the conversation, because it reminds us that really the phases of incident response that we talked about, and that is plan for the attack, resist infection, know how to detect it, and know how to respond to it, they're all part of a cycle that is a closed loop, so that hopefully once you've responded, then you can feed the information that you have learned back into your planning process. Because through incident response, you will have learned how malware propagates. Maybe you didn't anticipate a particular infection vector before. Well, now you know. You will know what are the limitations of your ability to respond. Maybe because, you know, you don't have enough people, or maybe you don't have the budget to buy expensive tools. Whatever your limitations are, that's something that you're going to learn having done this. And that kind of information will probably change some of your assumptions so that you can tweak your plans, and so that you can deploy or reconfigure the technologies that you have in place, and so that the next time you have to detect and respond to malware, hopefully you will do better. So it's important to think of all of these phases as being part of one connected cycle that guides us through incident response, and there's a loop, and as we learn, we need to continuously adjust our defenses and our response techniques.
Okay, let's recap our list of the top ways to identify and stop malware attacks quickly. Number one, planning. Be prepared and expect malware incidents to occur. Number two, resist attacks by investing in the right technology. Number three, detection. Revisit how you're identifying malware when it finds its way into your environment. And number four, respond. Know what to do to contain and ultimately recover from a malware incident. Lenny Zeltzer of Savvis, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You can get more great learning materials on defending against malware by visiting our Security School course catalog page. That's at searchsecurity.com/securityschool. And of course, you can always find more of our podcasts on our podcast page. That's searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.